Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine, and Tony and I are really excited today to talk about beef and grilling and all kinds of fantastic things to do cooking-wise outside. We're going to get started here.
Cindy Lou, you love the grill, don't you?
I do. You know, I think it comes from working inside of a kitchen for all these years.
You've been
and
trapped.
Dungeons and, you know, wherever. And the idea of standing outside on a sunny day, or even if it was raining out. I've grilled in the rain before outside. My grill at my house is right outside of my kitchen door, which makes it really fantastic because it's very close to all the things that I need while I'm grilling. So, yeah, my dad was in the meat business all of his life, and my grandfather and great-grandfather were butchers, so had butcher shops. So, you know, it's always been a big thing at our table, particularly eating beef.
So when I call you the butcher's daughter, it's pretty darn legitimate.
It is legitimate. My father was indeed grew up in a butcher shop.
I remember watching him give you lessons on breaking down a baby lamb some springs ago. Mm-hmm. In your kitchen at Charleston. It was pretty remarkable.
Yeah, you know, when you see a 80-year-old man showing my cooks how to pull apart a lamb, that's pretty cool. It really is. It's, there's so many great cuts, especially on a young lamb, from the legs, either roasting them whole or grilling them. But really, let's talk about beef and some of the questions about beef.
One of the things you do well is you make sure that all the basics happen the way they're supposed to happen. So can we start by talking about how to grill properly, correctly?
Yes.
Because you see these beautiful grills in some home improvement store, and then you go to someone's house for a cookout, and you see what looks like, you know, something has been through a car crash with all kinds of carbon built up on it and everything else, and you're like, really? You're going to put food on that and cook it? No.
So what's
the right way to go about setting up your grill, preparing to grill on it? And the how-tos of maintaining it so that you do get great product from your grill.
Absolutely. So you need, first of all, you want to check your propane, whatever you're using, make sure you have plenty of it. And, you don't want to be disappointed halfway through your meal and realize that you're out of gas. So that's kind of a silly thing to say, but seriously, it's happened to me before. I've gotten out there, turned on my grill, and gotten it up to full temperature and realized I was out of propane. So I always have an extra tank, actually, on hand.
Do you prefer propane to charcoal?
I do not prefer one or the other. I think they're all great ways to cook. I also love it if you have the opportunity to grill with wood and get that wonderful smoke aspect into it. And there are a lot of different, we could talk about this forever. I think one of the things that's, there's so many different ways to grill. This is an ancient way of cooking. You walk in the footsteps of, many people in history and many different cultures. When you talk about grilling, if you're going to talk about, I know you wanted to say something about kebab later on with Middle Eastern cooking and, Southern, pit barbecue. I mean, there's just all kinds of different ways to grill. Main thing is to make sure your grill is clean. So you need a good grill brush, a good wire brush that has a good face on it, and you can really clean that grill very well. I think the biggest thing when you're thinking about grilling is think of your grill as a saute pan. Don't think of it as something that's outside, that's this, thing that just sits there. Think of it as a saute pan. Would you put, if you had carbon in a saute pan, would you put food in there? Absolutely not. Would you put any kind of food in a dirty saute pan? Absolutely not. I would bring it up to temperature first. I usually turn on my grill on high if I have a gas grill. So if you're working with charcoal or working with wood, get it hot and then really, really brush it down very, very well. And I do that a couple of times. And then before you're ready to cook, you want to oil your grill down. Now, when you go to oil it down, we use just a kitchen towel, something that you can discard, you're not concerned with. We tie it up and we dip it in corn oil. Very few people are allergic to corn. So, it's a good kind of neutral oil to oil your grill down with.
Not to be completely stupid, but how do you manage to do that and not set it on fire?
And that's the whole thing. You want that towel not to be completely saturated. You want it to have a light amount of oil on it. And you want to just lightly oil your grill. And then you're ready to cook.
You do have, if you're not careful about it, you do have the possibility of having a flaming
flare-ups.
Torch in your hand.
Right. And also keep in mind that when you are marinating anything or any kind of quantity of oil, that you're going to have flare-ups. And flare-ups taste like kerosene. Your food suddenly tastes like kerosene. So obviously you don't want to have any flare-ups. You don't want your grill to be too hot either. I think that's the next point. You want to have a perfectly clean grill, and right before you're about to work on it, you want to oil it down, and you want to have some hotter spots and cooler spots. And having it on high, if you have that kind of grill, or if you are working with charcoal or wood, you know, you want to have a good heat surface, but you don't want it to be too hot.
So with the hot spots and cool spots, do you sometimes mark something, you know, almost like you would in a pan, sear it and then move it to a cooler spot cook more steadily?
Exactly. And you also want to cook evenly. So you want to turn food so that it cooks evenly on both sides. You don't want it to cook too hard on one side, and then, you know, you're not going to have an evenly cooked piece of food. The other thing that we often talk about, too, is, you know, obviously we're always very concerned about health and sanitation and having food be at the right temperature. You want to kind of, you know, really, especially if it's a larger piece of meat, you want to bring it, you know, out of the refrigerator, maybe even 15 minutes before you're about to grill it, just so that you're having, again, even cooking as it becomes a little bit warmer in temperature. And I don't want to say the word warm, but you know what I mean. You don't want it to be perfectly cold out of the refrigerator when you go to grill it.
What's the best way to check? I mean, do you just use a meat thermometer to check? Say you want to do half chickens on your grill.
The meat thermometer on a bigger piece of meat is a perfect way. You want to make sure you're going into the center of the piece of meat, you know, that you're actually using the thermometer correctly, and that you've tested your thermometer. I just put my thermometer into a small pot of boiling water and make sure it's at 212 degrees, that it registers correctly at boiling point, and then you know that your thermometer is working properly and that's calibrated properly. And then if you are new to cooking, you definitely want to use a thermometer. And then the other way is, as you cook more and more, you begin to recognize if you're really touching the piece of meat, you know, feeling the sides, pulling it in if it's a bigger piece of meat. You know, there are all kinds of different ways, but really, eventually, as you cook longer, you'll get to know when things are done.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. Experienced grill cooks always just have kind of like, they can just touch with a pair of tongs or touch with a finger and be like, that's medium rare.
Absolutely.
That's medium well. That's.
And those are people that cook, you know, a piece of meat, you know, 50 times a night. And, you know, obviously that's a tremendous amount of repetition, but you know, the longer you cook, the better you'll get at it.
What about the basics of like seasoning, oil, and marinating things so that you don't have flare-ups?
I think really it's your own desire as to, you know, first of all, you want to think about with your marinade, do you need to add acid to it? Is it a piece of meat that maybe needs to be broken down a little bit, or are you just looking for that flavor of the acid? Maybe it's a vinegar or fresh lemon or lime juice. So you want to decide if you really want acid in your marinade, and then, how long do I want to marinate it? Do I want to marinate it overnight? Is it a flank steak? Flank steak has some connective tissue in it. It's not a piece of beef tenderloin. A beef flank steak needs to marinate probably overnight with some acid. A piece of beef tenderloin does not need acid. I typically marinate, you know, beef tenderloin and extra virgin olive oil and some sort of herb and light salt and pepper. So it really depends on the piece of meat as to what you're going to do and as to what's in the marinade and how long.
Is there any particular thing that you can't stand grilling, you think should never be grilled? You think this is bad news grilling it?
Anything that's tough. You have to have primal cuts of meat to grill. You can't, the you know, a short rib or, you know, a tougher piece of meat needs to be braised.
The most terrifying thing of my youth that had to do with grilling is my mother became inspired one time to do a London broil. And she marinated it overnight thinking it was going to be much more tender. And it was pretty much, it was a boot that had Worcestershire sauce on it.
Oh, gee.
That we attempted to chew for about an hour. I think she could have marinated that in kerosene and it would not have broken down in any way, shape, or form.
Right. So you need primal cuts. Yes.
So what kind of cuts? What are your favorite cuts to grill? What are the best value cuts? What are the secret cuts? As the butcher's daughter, what are all the beef secrets that you should tell people?
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously hamburger is going to be one of your, that's not a secret, but, you know, as far as a secret, probably a skirt steak or
not to be silly,
steak, something like that.
What's important with hamburger meat?
Oh, well, with hamburger meat, it needs to be high-quality beef. You know, the better the beef, the better the hamburger, and you do need some fat in there. It's just a little bit like what we're going to talk about in a minute, which is you want all meat to have some marbling to it.
So for hamburger meat, you see these people, in the grocery store, you see 90 lean and 10 fat. That's probably too skinny for burger meat, really.
Definitely. Yeah, I think 80-20, you know, but I don't want to absolutely define that. I think people are going to decide what they want to do, but I would encourage you to get the best hamburger meat you can.
If you're inviting
and
me
as fresh as possible.
If you're inviting me for burgers, please make it 80-20 not skinnier than that. That's all I'm saying.
Right. And, you know, we have some wonderful local farms and, you know, I mean, I'll throw out a name because they do a great job, which is Rosetta. And it's a local farm and their hamburger meat is frankly some of the best hamburger meat I've ever had. So, you know, it's great when we can support locally. We always talk about these things, and you know, I think also what you also want to consider with any beef that you're working with, USDA, is it going to be prime, choice, or select? And obviously, if you can afford prime with different cuts, it's fantastic. But you know, there's nothing wrong with choice meat. And
so, what are the differences between those grades?
You're talking about marbling and age of the animal. You know, and with marbling, you want to see almost like a fine net of marbling going through the piece of meat.
So it's not, you know, just marbling, one big edge of fat.
No, right, right.
It's something that's sort of through the
It kind of creates a web. And what happens is you, when it's a fine, you know, smaller pieces of fat in the meat, it when it cooks, it melts and lubricates the meat basically as it's cooking.
That's what makes it tender.
Exactly. It makes it tender, makes the meat more tender, and it gives it flavor. Fat is flavor. And so it's absolutely important.
Tell me, aging of beef. You see, you always see this on restaurant menus, or you see, you know, dry aged beef.
Mm-hmm.
What is that about? Is it dry aged versus wet aged, or how old is the right age?
Well, there's no definition for that, but I think, you know, if something's aged 4 to 6 weeks, it's going to have great flavor. And, you know, obviously the longer the meat ages, the drier it gets. Now, I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean that it loses moisture as it ages. And, you know, your flavor intensifies. So obviously, if you're losing moisture, you're intensifying flavor. And the longer something's aged, the more strong it becomes. So, you know, and that's not a negative thing. It's just, you know, that's what's interesting about aged meat is it becomes more intensely flavored, and that's why it's desirable.
It loses water, not fat.
Right.
So the meat is stronger, the fat is stronger, and the water goes out.
So that, you know, you want to look, you know, that's one of the reasons why aged meat is desirable. And the other thing you want to look for is it organic? Is it, you know, what is happening with the meat? Is it, are there any growth hormones? Are there any antibiotics? You know, obviously you want to try to avoid that. And you know, again, I'm not preaching here. We're just talking about things that you can look for. And you make your own decisions about what you want to buy.
Something naturally raised should have more natural flavor, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then you see these terms thrown around, corn-fed, grass-fed, corn-finished. What is there the difference? Corn-fed is obviously more sugar, so more fat, right, for the cattle?
Some of the cattle are fed corn the last 120 days. I mean, everyone does, you know, every farmer has their way of doing things. And, you know, if you have grass-fed, they may be finished on corn. So there are a lot of different ways of farming. So, but that's a great piece of beef if it's fattened with corn feed. So that's a good way to go.
So natural flavor, more fat, that's what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When we come back, we're going to get into what beef Cindy actually wants to grill and what in the world to drink with it.